Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter Interior Paint is a paint and primer in one with a tough, lasting formula. It provides great scrub resistance and durability with remarkable hide and a smooth finish. Save big on Dutch Boy's DuraFighter Paint and start your next project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save big money at
Menards. Polarization just keeps getting worse in Washington. It's as bad as they've ever seen it, and it seems to be making Americans very upset.
Impeach 45!
This is politics.
Impeach 45!
Is this where we want to set the bar for future presidents?
Clinton was the worst in history.
It was a vote along party lines that made President Clinton only the...
I'm not for gay marriage.
I believe marriage is between a man and a woman.
And so does
Barack
John.
Obama nor I support
is the earth flat
this afternoon.
Our limousine was set on fire downtown.
It's my
smoke
decision.
Be seen
it's not
a baby.
Child
and protesters hurled
U.S. Navy has had the firm existence of the
Hey guys, welcome back to Bob and Weave. That's Bob. I'm the Weave.
What's up, everybody?
So we're going to get into something pretty hot today. That's probably one of our more controversial topics, I think, so far.
Yeah, it's complicated. And I want to preface this by pointing out that I've had a busy week. My wife had surgery this week. And so Zach was tasked with being our head researcher this week. So if anything's wrong, it's 100% the Weave's fault.
Mm-hmm.
And leave the Bob alone.
And shit could go south real quick here.
Yeah, it's a tough one. Well, tell them what it is.
So today's topic is the right to die,
mm-hmm.
or they also call it the right to die with dignity.
Right. Euthanasia.
Euthanasia, assisted suicide,
mm-hmm.
whatever you want to call it.
Right. You know, real quick before we get into it, I promise our fans that I would do this. For those of you that are looking for discussion on any of our topics, and hopefully you've been enjoying it so far, seems like everyone is. Of course, we have our own social media that's all at Bob Weave Pod. That's across all social media platforms. But some fans have created a fan group on Facebook specifically for discussion on all of our topics. Zach apparently has been participating in it for weeks and didn't tell me about it.
I thought you saw it.
No, I didn't see it.
I had no idea you didn't know about it.
I put a post up on the Truth and Justice page and somebody commented, I think Kelly Zappas commented mm-hmm. and said, if you guys want to talk about this, you can go over to the Bob and Weave fan group. And I was like, the what? First of all, I didn't know we had fans.
I didn't know we had fans either. But we do, apparently.
Yeah.
A couple.
But so I popped over there, and it's a cool group. So if you're looking for discussion, look up the Bob and Weave fan group on Facebook. And there's tons of conversations going on every day over there about all of our topics back and forth. So I told them that I would share with the world, our audience, that existed because Zach was in there participating and didn't care enough about any of you guys to tell you about it.
I told you shit can go south any minute here.
People love the Bob more than the Weep because
that's true.
I'm considerate.
You are. You're way more considerate than I am. I'm just here. I talk. I don't know what's happening half the time.
I'm really, as though I'm not participating in it, really want to see how this goes because the idea with this one is because you researched it that mm-hmm. you should be the one talking the most.
Okay.
But right before we came in here, Mike had to point out that apparently I have more energy today than
you
normal.
You were pumped up today. You were like way over the top today.
So we'll see how much.
All day.
How much I'm not talking.
Yeah.
Because I'm a little fired. Well, what happened was, as I mentioned, my wife had a surgery yesterday.
You didn't mention that, but you just mentioned that, so.
Oh, I think I did. We'll see when we rewind.
Okay.
But so I was taking care of her all day yesterday. Well, and at like 7:30 last night, she passed out.
Okay.
She took some Vicodin and passed out. And so I was in bed watching TV because I wanted to be there by her because she's, you know, hadn't been out of anesthesia
trying
for all that long.
To be a good partner.
Mm-hmm. So I didn't want to, because normally I would just come out to the office and work in that situation. Mm-hmm. But so at like 8:30, I was super duper bored. So I popped a couple of melatonin And I was asleep by 9 o'clock last night.
Those don't do anything for me.
Oh, they put me right to sleep.
They don't do anything for me. I've tried.
Love me some melatonin gummies. Yeah.
No, I've tried. They don't do anything for me.
Have you had the strawberry gummies?
I guess I haven't had the gummies.
The gummies are where it's at.
So,
but anyway, I was asleep by 9 o'clock last night. So when I woke up at 5:30 this morning,
you were ready to go.
I was ready to rock and
roll.
You
are recharged. You are pumped up.
Yep. And before we get into the seriousness of this topic, more a little housekeeping. We want to hear, you guys let us know on social media. So, you know, Zach always says he draws pictures for a living because he's a tattoo artist.
Oh boy, here we go.
So this week he's just started. I'm finishing a sleeve on my right arm. And so Zach drew some pictures on me and I posted it on our social media. And there were several listeners that said, number one, they would like a topic about our tattoos, which I think could be interesting.
Could be interesting.
Because you just showed me your torso today, which I didn't know what was going on there. Pretty interesting story.
Something.
But the other thing people kept suggesting is that Zach let me tattoo him. And I think that's a great idea. So
it's an idea. I don't know if it's a great one, but it's an idea.
Just let me carve my initials into you somewhere.
Why do I want your initials? Just out of everything you could tattoo on me, why would it be your initials?
Because I can't draw.
I would almost rather a bad picture than your initials.
Okay, I'll draw a stick figure then.
What's your middle name?
Huh? Charles.
Charles. So BCR?
Yeah, well, if I was going to go with Charles, I would do RCR. Yeah, RCR. Robert. Yeah.
I don't think about you as a Robert.
Right. I was just going to do BR.
I think you're a Bobbert.
A Bobbert.
That's how I feel.
Bobbert and Weaverton. But I think that would be a stick figure.
Okay.
Let me draw a stick figure on you.
Oh, boy. We'll see.
So you guys, everybody shame Zach into letting me draw a stick figure on him at his tattoo shop.
Oh, if you're watching on YouTube, go leave us a comment whether they should do it or not.
Yes. Or if you're any other things, go on social media.
Just say no.
If you're on YouTube, this is the...
Are we doing this again? Holy cow.
That's the start of my... tattoo that Zach drew on me this week. Looks really nice. And yeah, so go on social media or on YouTube and let us know if you want me to draw a tattoo on Zach. And then we can have people submit what the design is.
Oh my God.
You have
going downhill so quickly.
You have 1,000 tattoos. No one will even notice it's there.
I will know.
Where could we put it where you wouldn't be bothered by it?
I don't know. We'd have to find a spot.
Your armpit.
I don't want my armpit tattooed. I got spots on my leg. You can tattoo my leg, maybe.
Okay.
Maybe, if this comes to fruition.
A stick figure. Ugh. I'm so excited. This is happening.
A bad idea.
This is totally happening.
Such a bad idea.
Okay, enough fun. So we covered the Facebook group, Bob and We fan group.
Yep.
And the tattoo that I'm going to do on you coming up soon. We have an appointment on the 16th. So I think at the end of the appointment, I would, because you, I think, oftentimes hurt me more than you need to.
I don't think I do.
On purpose.
No.
And so maybe you'll behave yourself if you know that I get to tattoo you when we're done.
No. Oh, boy.
What if I'm really good at it?
What if you're not? What if you're really bad at it? That's the big issue.
And while we're having a little bit of fun mode. We have decided for next week's episode. This is going to be fun.
This is going to be fun.
And we said about once a month we want to do kind of a fun episode. And by the way, this one's not fun at all. It's going to get real sad here in a minute.
It is going to.
But for our fun episode for next week, the timing is just right. The episode will drop, I think, on the 18th of December next week.
Sounds right.
And on the 20th of December, the new and last installment of Star Wars is going live. So
we'll see if it's the last one.
Yeah, they keep making more. Well, I think they'll do more. We'll talk about it next week. Don't get me fired up. I've been watching them all to get ready for it, to refresh my memory. But so next week's episode will be a Star Wars episode. And your favorite, our editor and producer, Mr. Mike Bussing, is going to be our guest, who is the biggest Star Wars fan of all Star Wars
expert.
Fans.
We're calling him an expert.
He's our expert guest. And we're going to make him sit over there in the guest chair, not over here.
I think that's a good idea, really.
Yeah. Because otherwise he'll be messing with the computer the whole time.
That is funny.
Yep. So Mike will be our guest next week. We're going to talk about Star Wars. Hopefully you guys liked the Cory Booker episode. We enjoyed making it and we're going to continue that. But if we weren't clear about that, that series will, you know, it's going to be a series, but we're not like doing them every week. So probably sometime late December, we'll drop another one, not on Kamala Harris.
Yeah. Since we just skated out on that one.
We got so lucky because when we were deciding which candidate to do last week, it was between, because we wanted to do someone low in the polls because we knew people are going to be dropping out, so do them while they're in there. And we were going to do Kamala Harris and decided to do Cory Booker. As it turns out, if you were watching the news last week, the night before the Cory Booker episode dropped, Kamala Harris dropped out of the race. So had we done Kamala Harris, that would have been a big waste
fail.
Of a
huge fail.
Right. Yeah. Luckily, yeah. Booker's still in it.
As the kids say, epic fail.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, all that being said,
let's get sad.
I'm going to bring my energy level down for us to talk about a very serious and controversial topic, that of the right to die or the right to die with dignity. Zach, take it away.
So the basic concept is that a human being should be entitled to end his life or
his or her life,
his or her life at the time of their choosing, because they have, you know, the big fight is the right to live. So they say we have the right to live. We should have the right to die, which is, this is where it gets really sketchy. I don't want to say sketchy, but really back and forth, because what does that mean to everybody? So the big proponents of it are saying that people should have the right to choose a timely death for themselves in the cases that they are unable to take care of themselves. They have a physical ailment that is in, you know, that is drawing their life out and just is not helping them at all.
Making their life miserable, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. But then you have the other side that says, you know, are these people really able to justify this? You know, is taking one's life really that important? You know, they should be able to have the right to live. And some of these states or some of these cases are about a vegetable state of a person too.
Right.
So if they're not coherent, how can they say that they were able to do this? And this, I mean, it goes back and forth. There's huge.
Well, that one seems clear to me, even though I do have some opinions on this and I have a personal connection to some of this, but for someone else to decide to end your life, you know, when somebody's in a vegetative state to decide to end their life, that's tough. I don't think that's okay. But then again, are we talking about assisted suicide? Or are we talking about stopping life-saving measures?
So in this instance, these are all lumped together into one thing.
Okay.
Which is what we'll get into as we go along here.
Okay.
But the big thing is they're trying to go back and forth. And one side, the side for it, says that if we don't allow these people to do it, they're going to seek illegal alternatives.
Right.
Which could really be way more hazardous than just ending one's life.
A lot harder on the families, I would think.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to like going to the doctor and saying this is going to happen and everybody's saying their goodbyes and doing it. If they are not allowed to do that, then it's, you know, a gun, pills, whatever, and a surprise in someone's home.
Yeah. And then the side against it, you know, wants to say that it's a slippery slope.
Right.
So at what point is this okay? You know, because you're going to have people that, you know, mental illness is a huge thing in our country right now. And there are a lot of people that take their lives every day because of mental illness.
Right.
Is mental illness covered in this? Is it not? You know, typically this is for terminally ill people is what they're wanting to say, but it's a slippery slope to lead. Where's the cutoff?
The problem I have with this is the same. And keep in mind, obviously, it's not illegal to end your life, meaning you're gone.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be. It's the doctors that this really is talking about, like for a doctor to assist with this.
Mm-hmm.
This is the case as with a lot of things where it's how do you legislate it?
Mm-hmm.
So a parallel to this to me is when people are talking about the death penalty and they say, well, you know, I don't agree with the death penalty because you could get it wrong, but I think some people should be put to death. So it should be like, if you really, really know they did it,
yeah,
then you could kill them. But it's like, you can't, the laws when you legislate have to fit all circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you legislate so that only certain people get put to death?
How do you draw a line in the sand for that?
Right. Because there's always this gray area.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing with this. Like to say if someone is truly terminally ill, they're absolutely going to die and they decide to do this. You could try to legislate that, but there's so many loopholes to where, like you said, somebody who's mentally ill or somebody who maybe there's say somebody has cancer and there's treatment available that likely could save their life.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't want to do that treatment, so now are they terminally ill? Do they qualify? And again, this is all about the doctors.
Yeah.
It's just so hard to legislate.
So going into the other countries, what they have legal is Australia actually passed a law called the Voluntary Assisted Dying Act of 2017, which didn't take effect until 2019, but it allows people in the state of Victoria, which is part of Australia, the ability for assisted suicide or assisted dying,
right,
which protects the physician.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of this, they'll say physician assisted death.
Right.
So what that's doing is allowing the physician to prescribe medication, mm-hmm. a lethal amount of medication to end their life.
Do they do it in like a controlled environment, like in a hospital, or it's just like, here's enough of a medicine that you can overdose on and send them home?
I don't know how these other countries are. Uh-huh. I couldn't find a lot on the other countries at the moment.
Right.
The United States is the states that it's legal in has to be in a controlled environment.
It's legal, and I didn't know it was legal in some states.
There are several states. We'll actually get to that. There are several states that it's legal in.
Okay.
And one state actually does allow outside, like would allow them to prescribe medication to mm-hmm. take outside. But we'll get to that eventually.
Okay.
in Belgium, actually passed in 2002. This is one of the earlier legislations that came through. It was 2002. The parliament said that it legalized euthanasia, which actually is what kind of brought this on, because that's in the news right now. Just this past, a little over a month ago, there was a Paralympic athlete that took her own, or was euthanized, that mm-hmm. said, you know, she was done. She had, I want to say she had ALS. Now I totally skipped on what she had. Her name was Marika Vervoort.
Marika Vervoort. Yes.
See, I messed that up. I knew I was going to mess that up.
Because when you looked it up before we recorded, I typed it into my screen.
Gotcha.
Marika Vervoort.
So she was a Paralympian in the London Games. She actually medaled. She was a gold medalist in the London Games for wheelchair racing.
Okay.
And she decided to end her life. And being that she's in Belgium, she was able to, based on this legislation. Then we move on to Canada. So Canada in 2011 had a lawsuit filed against the British Columbia Supreme Court.
Okay.
With the British Columbia Civil Liberties Association in conjunction with a woman named Gloria Taylor. And this was the first lawsuit in Canada mm-hmm. for the Die with Dignity Act, basically, is what they're going for.
Okay.
In February 2015, so that's how long it took this, the Supreme Court of Canada said that denying the right for assisted suicide was unconstitutional.
And this is from the 2011?
From the 2011 case.
Okay, so it took 4 years.
So it took 4 years. And in the meantime, Gloria Taylor, who was pushing for this, actually passed away from a different ailment than she was trying to pass away from.
Right.
Which is a sad story in its own. But they had to go through a whole, you know, there was a whole rigmarole of going through the parliament and trying to pass it.
Is that now precedent in Canada?
As of June of 2016, it is by law able to euthanize.
Okay.
So it went through the Parliament of Canada. It had a royal assent, which means they gave permission to do it. Mm-hmm. And it is now legal in Canada.
Okay. So I wonder how they draw those lines?
See, theirs is all by illness, disease, or disability. Now, I don't know where they draw the line on that.
So it's specific illnesses and diseases and disabilities where they allow it?
So it just says including illness, disease, and disability. So okay. I don't know what that fully states. You know, I didn't dive into like the actual law.
I guess we don't need to get that deep into it. I was just curious if countries that do have these laws in place, how they draw those lines.
Yeah, it's interesting to see, because I don't fully know. You know, when you first look into this, you think could be anybody.
Right.
You know, I could decide that today I don't want to live anymore. And decide to go through the legal loopholes to do this, so
right.
to kind of figure out what to do. But a lot of these cases are for terminally ill, you know. Right. And like you said, where is that line drawn? How does that fit in?
Well, I said for me, what was always tricky was when I was a fireman, was the DNRs, the do not resuscitate, mm-hmm. and so that's a little different. That plays into when you're in the hospital, when they say pulling the plug, where. Like to me, that's not suicide. If there's life saving equipment, say a respirator, mm-hmm. keeping someone alive, and without this equipment, they will die. Mm-hmm. And the families have to decide whether to leave them on that or pull them off. It's easy if they have a DNR, and it says, you know, I don't want life saving measures, so they disconnect them. But then having to make, you said that's kind of lumped into this in the laws and what the states in the United States.
In the United States, yeah, it's lumped in there, and I do have some of the acts written down in here that we'll get to once I get to the United States.
Okay.
A couple other countries real quick. Colombia is one that actually in 1997 allowed it, starting mm-hmm. allowing it. India started allowing it in 2018. Mm-hmm. And that is, there was a case, this is like you're talking about being in a vegetable state.
Right.
Aruna Shanbaugh, I'm probably butchering that name. Mm-hmm. she was, that was the big case for India. Okay. She was in a vegetative state for 42 years. So she was attacked, a sexual assault, was in a vegetative state for 42 years. And then, you know, they basically said, she's never going to come out of this. This right. is it. And that's, the family really fought to be able to, we'll say, pull the plug on her.
Right. But was it just pull the plug, or did they have to kill her? Like, did they have to, you know, inject her with a drug or stop feeding her? Because to me, those are two different, it's a very different thing to, like say she was on a respirator keeping her alive. It's a very different thing to say, okay, we're going to stop doing this,
mm-hmm.
and she's immediately going to just die naturally, as opposed to, you know, her heart's beating, her body's working on its own. As long as we just keep giving her fluids and food, she'll live and decide. That's a different to me.
So she actually died before it was put in. She died of pneumonia in 2015.
Okay.
But her case was the one that really was pushed forward through fighting this.
Okay.
So she
in
actually,
India, you said?
In India.
Okay.
Yeah. So she actually wasn't euthanized, mm-hmm. wasn't had the plug pulled on her, but that was the big case that they used
right.
in India to try to advance that.
Mm-hmm.
The Netherlands is also one that's been around since 2002 that has legalized voluntary euthanasia. And again, that has to be performed by a doctor based on their law.
Right.
And in there, they have a very weird verbiage in theirs too, that it says, only in legal cases of hopeless and unbearable suffering. So that seems very open-ended to me. But
yeah,
that's but literally like...
Who decides that?
I don't know. Is it a doctor? Is
well,
it family?
Well, and that's what I'm wondering. Do they have to go through like a... Like submit it to a judge for the right, or can does the doctor get to make the decision?
Yeah, that's, I don't know.
Because I had never heard of this before the late 90s when Jack Kevorkian is the one that made it big.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think he had assisted in like 130
So I
deaths.
Think that was actually earlier than the late 90s. It was more.
He was convicted in 98 because it was right after I graduated high school, I think.
Yep, you're like, right, 98.
Mm-hmm.
But convicted in 99.
Okay.
10 to 25 years.
Yeah, but he didn't serve all that.
Yes. Now you're getting on me again. God damn it. You're asking questions that I didn't look up.
I think he served 8 years is all he ended up serving.
Okay.
I totally have all his Wikipedia page up right here, and
son
I'm acting like I know this off the top of my head.
You son of a bitch. And you're asking questions that I didn't look up. Look, see, I looked for numbers and stuff.
Yeah, but no, in all seriousness, I have his page up in front of me. I was just messing with Zach. But yeah, so he assisted in 130 deaths. I just remember because I was in high school,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I graduated in 97, and I was in high school. And actually, my senior year, I did a report on euthanasia, like a presentation.
Okay.
And so it was by 96, 97, he was a well-known name mm-hmm. because of this, and then it was... In 98, he was arrested, in 99, convicted for the assisted suicides.
Yeah. And I believe there was one that was taped and like put on 60 Minutes or something too, like in the early 90s or mid 90s.
It might have been. He only ended up with one charge of second degree murder.
Okay.
And I wonder if it was because of that one.
I think it is. I think that's the one that they, well, they had proof of it. And I think there was something sketchy about it where the person couldn't push the button themselves, basically. Like I think that was part of it at the beginning, was he would provide them with whatever, but they had to
probably give him an IV or whatever, and they just have to push a button to
release the medication.
I wonder what it was. If it was just like a morphine overdose.
A lot of these just say a lethal dose of medication.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if they have something.
Right.
Or, you know, I mean, like you said, if it's morphine or if they actually have something prescribed for this.
Right.
That's a good one. I should look that up. You're killing me, man. You're killing me.
You know, in the interest of time, before we go, you know, through all these other countries, can we get to...
That's the last country.
Good. Do you have... Because I had no idea it was legal anywhere in the United States. Which states is it legal in?
So it is legal in California, mm-hmm. Colorado, Hawaii, New Jersey, Oregon, Vermont, and Washington, D.C. Obviously not a state, but the District of Columbia.
Right.
And then there's two states... that kind of have an iffy area. Mm-hmm. So New Mexico and Montana both have a weird ruling that they have said that nowhere is it illegal, is okay. essentially what they're saying. They're saying there's, if you really look it up, they basically said, nowhere in here in our rules or laws does it say you can't do it.
I wonder if that's just a legal precedent where someone did it.
Mm-hmm.
They brought it before the courts, and the courts were like, well, we don't have a law in the book that says you can't do that.
Yeah.
And they didn't convict or whatever, and they created a precedent because of it.
And that can be. I mean, that could be for sure. I know in 97, the U.S. Supreme Court had a ruling in assisted suicide based out of New York and Washington that said that it was a felony for a physician to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where a lot of states started coming forward, being able to try to decide for each state by state whether
right.
they wanted it or not. And that's where a lot of these other states started to come forward. And when we said, and I did mention Maine being one of the states, they actually just recently, as of September 2019, put it into place, that it's a law that, that it can happen.
A couple months ago.
Yeah. And so what this does is this protects physicians from any legal lawsuits or anything like that.
Right.
For their ability to be able to help a patient.
This is a tough one, man, because I don't even know where I fall. You know, I've had experience on both sides of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as I started to mention, you know, as a firefighter, one specific time, as a matter of fact, I think Mike was with me on this call, but we got a call for a full arrest, is what mm-hmm. which means someone is not breathing, they can't find a pulse. And we respond and we get there, and it's an older lady, mm-hmm. you know, probably in her 70s or 80s, and she's down, she's on the couch, and she's gone. But freshly gone, mm-hmm. you know, for us, like if you walk in, sometimes the person's purple and their rigor mortis set in, obviously there's no life-saving measures to take place. Well, so we go in and it's me and Mike was new. And I think another younger probationary firefighter was with me, and her son starts yelling at us, says, "Don't effing touch her." And I'm like, you called me.
Yeah.
Like I have to touch her. I have to try to save her. He's like, don't you do it. She's been through enough. And it was like this conflict. Some of the family members had called us and wanted us to come try to save her life.
Mm-hmm.
The son was like, don't touch her. She's been through enough. She's been suffering. Do not save her life. And I almost got into a fist fight with him. I had to physically grab him and pull him out of the way because he said, well, she's got a DNR. And the way the rules are, the laws are, I said, well, then you need to show it to me.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you show it to me, we are going to begin treatment. And so I had the guys start, you know, to start working her, giving her oxygen, starting CPR, getting a monitor on her. And I had to grab him, like, listen, I have laws regulating what I have to do. It's called duty to act. I have a duty to act to put life-saving measures towards helping this woman.
Okay.
Unless you can show me paperwork that she signed that says do not resuscitate.
Mm-hmm.
And he was pissed. I finally called him down and they went and started looking for it. The thing is, as a first responder, you know, someone could have killed her and said, oh, she's got a DNR, don't touch her. And like, oh, okay. Like, we can't just take someone's word for it.
Mm-hmm.
But that was tough for me on that side because I got it. You could tell by looking for it. I think she had cancer she'd had a long fight. And she was skin and bones, looked frail, and I'm sure the guy was American. I know because they eventually got it. They had to like call a doctor and get him on the phone once the ambulance showed up.
Yeah.
In the meantime, we had to keep doing CPR and stuff. But man, it makes you just want to bawl when you're there because it's like I'm doing everything I can do to try to save this woman. When I'm pretty sure she doesn't want to be like, what am I saving her for?
Mm-hmm.
She's got terminal cancer. She's dying. She's in constant miserable pain. And I'm doing, and she's finally done with that. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to bring her back. I mean, thankfully we weren't successful in resuscitating her.
Yeah.
But so that was tough on that side of it. But I actually had this with my grandmother.
Oh, wow.
And it's kind of a funny story. You wouldn't think so.
Okay.
But
so hold up before you get into that. With the DNR stuff, what does a person need to have for that?
You have to have a paperwork that you fill out and sign, and you have to be of sound mind and body when you do it,
mm-hmm.
or sound mind. So, you know, when you're healthy, essentially, or even sometimes like people will like they get diagnosed with cancer and it's terminal,
mm-hmm.
and they decide that they want to just go when they go.
Yeah,
and sometimes just a living will. Like you right now at 30, what are you, 5?
35,
you could go create a living will that says, you know, if I have, you know, if I ever die of a heart attack or whatever, I do not want life-saving measures taken.
Okay.
I do not want, and you can be specific.
Mm-hmm.
I do not want to be put on a respirator. I do not want a feeding tube. So those are all considered a living will. Then you file that, get it notarized, you have it, and then you file them with a physician. Usually people will, which is what happened with this lady. They called the physician, and he was able to quick send an email to the guy's phone or something.
Okay.
And show them, like, no, she did. She signed it. But if that's not in place, and or if they can't find it, then it doesn't do any good, because any medical first responder, because we could be sued. If we showed up and you say, don't help her, and we don't help her, and she dies, and then the other sister, you know, the other daughter says, why didn't you save her life? You could have saved her, even though we couldn't have. But and now we could lose our license. We could be charged criminally. I mean, there's a lot of liability that comes with being a medical professional in that manner. So it has to be filed, notarized. I don't know all of the procedures exactly. I don't know if a doctor has to be involved, but I know it you have to have paperwork that shows that when you were in sound mind, you made this decision.
Yeah. No, I know a lot of it. And I've read a lot that they call it a advanced directive.
Mm-hmm.
They call it that as well. There's actually in 1991, there is a act that they put in that requires hospitals to let people know that they can refuse treatment if they want to.
Right.
The big problem with that act that came out later was it didn't cover individual providers, individual physicians.
Okay.
So physicians didn't have to, so they could continue to do this treatment.
Right.
Regardless. And basically it was a money.
But it only cover like the hospital?
Yeah. It was through Medicare is what it was, but it was hospitals, hospice, places like that.
Uh-huh.
But it didn't cover like independent facilities or independent privately owned businesses.
So they would still do it.
So they could still do it for profit, essentially.
Right. It's tough, man. Like I said, for me, especially, I would say, you know, the difference between being a medic on a fire truck as opposed to being like a nurse or a doctor in a hospital is the environment is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've always said, you know, we would take a patient in after a car accident to the hospital, and a nurse would be like, we bring him in like, well, why didn't you start an IV? Why didn't you intubate? Like, why did you do this or why did you do this? Like, I don't know, because they were upside down in a car at the bottom of a ditch, leaning over a river in a rainstorm.
Yeah.
When I was treating them, I didn't have them on a little table like you do when they get them there. The same thing. So everything is happening super fast for us, not me anymore, for first responders, because you know they're not in that controlled environment. So you walk into someone's house, and you got a guy threatening to beat you up if you touch his mother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's tough. But I remember that instance specifically, and reminded me of what I'll tell you here shortly about my grandmother, because I felt terrible because, like, I don't want to do it. But there's so much liability and so many laws governing what we have to do, what we're required to do, and what we're required not to do.
Mm-hmm.
That I'm not in that profession anymore, but I don't miss it at all.
I can understand that for sure.
Yeah. What happened with my grandmother was, and this has been 7 years ago now, my grandma died. She didn't die on this day, but my grandmother had kidney failure.
Okay.
And she was 89 years old, and she was just getting worse and worse. She was in a lot of pain. She was miserable. She was starting to have some issues affecting her brain too.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it was from the medications or what. Like at one point, you know, she called me over to her house because there was a little girl in her house.
Okay.
And I showed up, and it was, and if you knew, I'll laugh about some of this stuff, and it's not, this is my grandma, right? So like we would joke about this stuff later. It's just the kind of personality she had. But she calls me and she's sitting there giggling going, there's that little girl. Like, no, she's here. She, look, there she goes again. And she's like giggling and laughing, pointing at my dad and I are there like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like there's no, and she was just like, and we took her in and had brain scans. She had a stroke or whatever it was. We didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they ever figured out why, what was going on there. I think it had partially to do with her memory was slipping a little bit.
Okay.
And she had a bedtime routine that included a glass of schnapps.
All right.
And I think she repeated that routine a couple times that night with medication.
That's rough.
She also repeated a couple times that night.
Yikes.
But from there, that's when things really started going downhill. And then her kidney started slipping. She was in and out of the hospital. We ended up putting her into an assisted living center because we just couldn't take care of her anymore. And one day, I still remember to this day, it was mine and Becky's old house. And I was finishing the basement. I was downstairs doing drywall. And my dad calls and said, grandma's not good. I don't think she's going to make it. She called us from the hospital. This is a living center. And she just wants everybody there.
Okay.
And I remember sitting on my steps of the basement, just like crying. Like, I can't believe grandma's, she's going to die. Like, I can't believe this is happening. My grandma was, I was super close with my grandma. I would always go over to her house and just, she's one of the, you know, I still miss to this day, is go sit with her and just talk about whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, her husband, my grandfather, was a POW in World War II. He was a B-17 pilot, and he would never talk about any of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But she would tell us the stories about and show us letters, you know, from when he was in POW. So it was rough. So I get in my truck and I fly all the way down. I was in Bridgman and it was in Niles,
mm-hmm.
Woodland Shores, or Woodland Terrace. So I drive all the way there and I get there and my brother's there. And my mom and dad, then my uncle, my aunt, my cousins show up, and everybody's sitting around this little room, and my cute little 4'11" grandma sitting in her bed, and she's just, well, I'm so glad you're in. Everybody's kind of crying and hugging her and kissing her, and she's sitting there, and she's like, everybody's here. Okay, anytime now. We just keep sitting. We're like, I don't know. Like, at some point, we start to ask ourselves, like, why are we here?
Yeah.
Like, what's going on? And she's like, oh, well, this is ridiculous. I had him bring in all these chairs. I got you all here. And it's been 3 hours and nothing.
Oh, jeez.
Like, grandma, what are you talking about? She's like, well, I told him to kill me.
Oh, my goodness.
Like, what are you talking about? And she's like, doctors came in. They gave me my prognosis. I feel like crap. And they were giving my IVs. And I said, just give me enough to just kill me. I want to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Will you please just end my life? I want to go be with, you know, she had lost 2-3 kids by that point, mm-hmm. and her husband. She's like, I'm ready to go. Just give me the drugs.
Yeah.
And so they pushed her drugs into her IV. She thought they gave her the drugs to kill her. So then she called everyone in the family, mm-hmm. and told them to come say goodbye to her. So after we sat there for 2 hours, we finally figured out that that's what she was waiting for, was to die.
Wow.
After she said goodbye to us. And it was just like that. She's like, it's been 3 hours and nothing.
Oh, man.
We're like, grandma, they can't do that.
Yeah.
They didn't kill you. Yes, they did. I told them I wanted them to take me out. And I saw him push the medicine in. And mm-hmm. we had to bring the doctor in for him to explain to her.
That's not what happened.
That's not what happened. But, you know, as far as the both emotional side of this and the legal side of it. So, that was it. Ended up being she recovered a little bit from there.
Mm-hmm.
We had another good 6 months with her, probably another good 3 months with her.
Yeah,
and we joked about I'd go visit her, and we would always joke about that day that she made us all come watch her die when she thought she was going to die. And I remember telling him like, "Screw you, Grandma. Oh, why do you think I want to watch you die?" That was
such a weird
up.
Thing to laugh at.
I know, but that's my family, you know.
Yeah.
But then the last 3 months,
mm-hmm.
I watched her suffer.
Yeah.
I watched her not be able to eat and then refusing to eat because she was done.
Mm-hmm.
And we would go visit her and she would sit with me and she'd just be like, I'm done. I don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah.
You know, with my grandma's faith, she believes she's going to die and she's going to go to heaven and she's mm-hmm. going to be with her kids and she's going to be with her husband. And she's just miserable and hurting and just sick of all of it. And she couldn't. And then I watched her wither away
mm-hmm.
for months.
Yeah, and that's tough.
I went and saw her the day before she died. I mm-hmm. went to we had moved her to a different assisted living center, and she was so frail and so miserable. And she her memory was slipping. She was still, I mean, she still knew who we were
mm-hmm.
and stuff, but she's just, I'm her just crying and saying, I'm done. I'm done. I'm done. I'm done. I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
I'm ready to go. She kept saying, I'm ready to go. And then finally that night, and it was when we got the call that she, in the morning when the nurse went in, she was gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a relief for us because we knew she yeah. wanted to be gone. Then I think back to that first night, like if she could have passed away in a room surrounded by everyone she loved in her own, going out the way she wanted to go out while she still had all her faculties,
mm-hmm.
got to kiss everyone goodbye and sit there with everyone she loved surrounding her. She could have died with dignity on that day.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, my grandma still died with dignity, but she died alone in a hospital bed in assisted living center after months of misery.
Mm-hmm.
And so to me, like, she should have been able to do that.
Yeah.
But I also know that is a law and a privilege that could absolutely be abused as well.
It really is. It's tough to see where that, you know, like I said before, that line in the sand of,
mm-hmm.
of how do you say that this person's allowed to and that person is not.
Right.
You know, my story isn't nearly as profound as yours. I had an uncle suffering from brain cancer, and he chose to refuse treatment.
Uh-huh.
You know, they basically told him that it was inoperable. He was going to die.
Right.
If you do the treatment, you might make it a couple years. If you don't, you're going to make it a couple months, you know, but they said the treatment was going to make him miserable.
Right. Radiation and chemo and all that.
And he refused to do it. Mm-hmm. He chose that route, tried to live out his life the best he could. But at the end of his life, it was exactly like you said. He was mm-hmm. suffering so bad and he just wanted it to be over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's all he wanted was he's just like, I'm going to die. So please just can it happen now?
Right.
Like, let's be over this.
Mm-hmm.
It's tough. You know, like I said, it's a weird thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a weird ethical thing, weird moral thing. And I think it really comes down to that quality of life. At what right. point, you know what I mean? Are you choosing quantity over quality?
Mm-hmm.
And that's hard. And like you said, though, it could really be abused if you put laws in place like this.
Right.
The other side, you know, what's the other side of it? That's the hard part.
I think as literally thinking on the fly, as we're sitting here talking about it, I feel like the only way that this could really be done ethically would be similar to what we talked about with the DNR,
mm-hmm.
where when you're in a state of sound mind,
mm-hmm.
that you fill out paperwork, sign it. And I think that it would be something that would need to go before a judge, like our judges around here have so much time on their hands,
mm-hmm.
you know, but something where some sort of review board or something where you could submit in order to release the doctors of that liability of making that choice where, you know, say it's me, I have terminal cancer, been given 6 months to live, there's nothing they can do about it. And so in my situation, I say I would like to do a doctor-assisted suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And I fill out the paperwork to do it, and it gets submitted to a judge or a panel or someone within the medical board or the court system that reviews it, looks at the evidence, takes testimony or whatever, and says, okay, we approve this to happen. And once you have that, like the DNR, where you can go and say, okay, I think that's the only way you could stop it from being abused, but that's more bureaucracy. It's more time and a lot of things we don't have an excess of, one being time in our court system.
Yeah. Well, on top of that, that is putting a lot on the people too. Obviously, it's something we need to do. Like, it's something, like you said, a living will. Maybe everybody right. should have a living will. But now you're trying to get people to do a living will when half the time I can't return an email.
Right.
You know what I mean? In a timely fashion. So how am I going to get around to doing a living will too?
Well, the hard part is, so say my grandmother.
Mm-hmm.
Say she had $1 million in the bank.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't. But just say, you know, she did. And if, you know, her kids, you know, my mom or my uncles or whoever talked her in when she's in a state of misery and they talk her into like, well, let's, you know, let's go ahead and do this assisted suicide thing. And mm-hmm. we can do it. And they convince the doctor, they convince them when they're not in a sound mind to do it for their own gain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those are some of the ways I could see it being abused as opposed to where she would say, okay, I'm not suggesting it's a living will. I'm saying this is something that in the moment,
mm-hmm.
you know, where like, okay, I just found out, you know, a living will is for like in any case, in case I'm unconscious
mm-hmm.
and I'm in XYZ scenario, this is what I want to happen. With this, it would be, okay, I just found out that, you know, I'm only going to live 6 months and I'm going to be miserable. I don't want to do that. I would like to have a doctor assisted suicide. Then you fill out this paperwork and submit it to mm-hmm. a doctor that would be willing to do it. And it goes before some review board to look at. And then I think they would want to hear from you. But someone to review, okay, what is the diagnosis, to have her doctor testify, is there anything you can do to save her life? You know, is this accurate? Okay, we approve this person to go through with this.
Mm-hmm.
But again, that falls right on the other side of something that I've always talked about that I'm not a big fan of, which is the government button into our business because they're not good at doing that.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, that's taking the choice out of your hands.
Right.
You know, and I think that's a big thing with this is by calling it the right to die, you know, you're also saying you have the right to live.
Right.
So now you're taking it out of my hands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're putting it in a doctor's hands saying they're making the choice. You're right. Putting it in a judge's hands saying they're making the choice.
Right.
You know, I still feel like it's a fine line. And I don't know how I feel about this. I honestly, even sitting here right now, researched and talking to you, I still don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah.
Because there are times, you know, your grandmother, my uncle, mm-hmm. you know, I've seen it. My wife's grandmother went through the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what they wanted.
Right.
But then the other side of it is that also right? You know, you're taking someone's life. It's so difficult. It's so...
There's a lot that goes... Because there's, you know, different faiths.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know... I can't speak intelligently about other religious faiths and their feeling, but I know, like, as far as Christianity goes, like, suicide's not a thing that you're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not supposed to kill yourself or anybody else. So I'm not saying that will obviously factor into the decision you would make for yourself,
mm-hmm.
but I would be more concerned about that factoring into other people's decision.
Yeah.
So my grandmother was a Christian.
Okay.
But she was like, nope, I'm done. That's it. But I think that's why for her, that was the option. Telling the doctor, please give me something to stop this so she wasn't taking her own life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's just it's a really complex issue. I get, now somebody else, you're taking that choice and giving it to someone else. But I feel like there's got to be checks and balances in there.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, can you imagine the lawsuits flying against doctors?
Yeah.
You know, because again, it's not the person. Anyone can kill themselves.
Yeah.
Not that, I mean, obviously, please don't.
Yeah, please don't. We're not promoting that.
Yeah. But, you know, anyone can do that. It's not like you're getting prosecuted for it. It's not illegal to kill yourself. It's illegal for someone else to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, what you're asking for is we're looking for legislation or what the right to die is. It's legislation allowing murder in certain circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're
I mean, that's the way to put it.
Yeah, it's that's why it's an issue. It's not murder because it's not, you know, it's somebody's asking you to do it, but it is murder in the fact that if there's no law saying it's okay for them to take your life, then taking your life is willfully and intentionally is murder.
Mm-hmm.
And so people are trying to make it not murder.
Yeah.
Is what we're talking about here. And I don't know. I think that there's got to be some kind of check and balance.
Mm-hmm.
In it, and otherwise, I don't think doctors would do it. I mean, Kevorkian was a pioneer in this, and he's from Michigan. Did you know that?
I did know that actually.
Yeah, Royal Oaks, Michigan. But he was doing this way back then,
mm-hmm.
and like the media called him Dr. Death, and I don't know anything about him.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he really was a bad guy too. I don't know. You know, I'm sure he could be scamming people for millions of dollars for all I know. I don't know, but I'm sure there was a lot of people that he helped with that were grateful that he did.
Mm-hmm. You know, looking through the different cases. A lot of the cases that have came through lawsuits to try to push things have all been family with a family member in a vegetative state. You know, the very first one was Karen Quinlan in 1975. That was the first major lawsuit that kind of brought this to it.
Okay.
And she was 21. She drank a bunch of alcohol, took some tranquilizers,
mm-hmm.
never came out.
Right.
And she was... They said she would never come out, and her family wanted to remove the feeding tube and the respirator, and that was the first big lawsuit. You know,
right.
That's not that person choosing to live, but they're trying to choose something for their daughter. You mm-hmm. know, their daughter's going to be here, you know, the rest of her life, whatever it is,
right.
But not there. You know, they're trying to choose.
Because they can do tests and tell that there's no brain activity.
Yeah, and they're trying to take a natural death, a natural ethical death for this girl instead of stringing her along. Stringing her body along.
Wasn't there something a couple years ago that was big in the news?
Terry Schiavo? Is that the one you're thinking of?
Is that the kid? There was like a kid, the parents.
So Terry Schiavo, I wouldn't say she was a kid. She was a woman and she was married. And after she went into her state, the husband got legal guardianship over her.
Uh-huh.
And the husband decided to pull the feeding tube.
Right.
And the family were suing him to not do
that.
That was the big battle there. And that wasn't between them and the state. That was between each other.
Right. because he had the as the person with power of attorney,
mm-hmm.
the ability to decide to stop the life-saving measures. And that's and I do remember that case. That's mm-hmm. why I rang a bell. But the one I'm thinking of was a couple years ago. I think it was like the opposite. It was these parents, they had a kid that was in a vegetative state. I'll look it up here in a second. But they wanted to keep him on life support, and it was the opposite. It was like the state saying no. Like the doctors were suing to the, or whoever filing some sort of legal claim to say we need to pull the plug on this kid because he's never coming back from the state that he's in.
Wow.
And it was something I'm gonna pause this for a second.
Yeah, no, I didn't see that. Well, for instance, in the case I was just talking about, the Karen Quinlan case that I brought first, you know, hers wasn't choosing her death. Hers was a choosing life-extending
right.
treatment.
Yeah, and I think there's a difference there.
Yeah.
Between pulling the plug on life-saving measures,
mm-hmm.
like a respirator, and giving someone drugs to kill them.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are two different things.
And it is. And in this case, which is what I found interesting, is they did. They pulled the respirator in 1976. So the case went to 1975.
Uh-huh.
The respirator was pulled in 1976, and she lived until 1985.
After they pulled the plug?
After they pulled the plug.
So she still lived another 9 years after mm-hmm. that? Wow. So I looked up, I think I found the case I was talking about. The headline is, family is devastated after a hospital removes their 2-year-old son from life support against their wishes. This is it. Yeah, it was a long legal battle, and a judge decided to remove Israel Stinson from a ventilator. So I guess without going all the way into it, because I'm kind of reading as we go. But so essentially, this kid suffered like an asthma attack and brain injury. It's a toddler, 2 years old.
Okay.
And he ends up getting put on life support. And it was the doctors realized that he's never coming out of this vegetative state.
Mm-hmm.
And they wanted to pull the plug. And the parents refused. And they said, no, we want to keep him yeah. alive. Which, I mean, I guess depending on how you look at it, I guess could be selfish in the fact that this poor kid is just in limbo, whatever that's like,
mm-hmm.
kind of being in that limbo. But it was a long legal, it was in the news for a long time. I remember watching it every morning, this ongoing dilemma. And then eventually a judge ordered that they were to remove the life support with the parents fighting them not to do it. And they pulled the life support and the kid died.
Yeah.
But it was a weird scenario, very different from...
That is very different. And I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, that's a hard one too. You know, as a parent, you want what's best for your child, you know, and maybe sometimes you're not choosing what's best for your child, but that's hard, you know, to have the doctors choose that for you. Even if it is the best choice for that child, that's still hard to have someone else make that choice.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how I feel about it with that one. It's with a lot of these, but
yeah,
look at it, because it's a long story. But yeah, the kid's name again, if you want to look up and do some research on him, was Israel Stinson. But I just remember like every morning on the news, like the legal battle continues.
Mm-hmm.
This kid sitting on a ventilator with the... I just couldn't figure out like why, of all the people that are on ventilators, why the hospital was insisting on... But as I'm skimming this article,
mm-hmm.
I'm seeing that there was something like... people were saying like they don't know why the hospital took him to begin with. They knew his state. They basically brought in a dead baby or mm-hmm. dead 2-year-old, and the hospital took him and went ahead and put him on a ventilator. He wasn't alive.
Yeah,
you know, he was dead, and they have machines that are making him breathe and move his blood around.
Yeah,
making him. But he had been dead long enough that he was brain dead, and then the hospital was like, okay, well, we're done. He's gone, and the parents. I mean, I don't know. As a parent, I can look at that logically and say that's silly. Like, why would you keep him on life support when mm-hmm. you know that when he's gone? But also, I think that if you're losing a child, it's so horrendous and horrible.
Yeah.
If you could just hold on to that, I don't know.
That's rough. That's so tough.
Super sad.
We went through I don't want to say similar, but, you know, I've been there when we've had to make a choice like that. You know, when my wife's mother passed away, we were in the hospital and they were doing life-saving measures on her, continuous, you know, and at some point the doctor, we were in there. We were there the whole mm-hmm. time. And at some point the doctor said, we could keep going, but it's probably not going to matter. You know, and to make that choice to say, this is it.
Yeah.
It's tough. Damn it.
It is. And I think that's a good spot to pull the plug on this episode.
Yeah. Way to say that.
All right, buddy. Well, as always, Zach, thanks for being my friend, buddy.
Thanks. Love you, buddy.
Love you, too. And love you, listeners. We'll see you guys next week.
See you soon.
Bob and Weave is an NBI Studios production, produced and edited by Mike Bussing, and music by Shane Yoder of PutThemInASong.com. The artwork and our logo was created by Zach, and the video editing was done by me. You can connect with us on all forms of social media at Bob Weave Pod. And if you'd rather watch than listen, check out the Bob and Weave Podcast on YouTube. If you have any questions or a guest request, you can email us at contact@BobWeavePod.com. And if you like the show, please take a minute to go on iTunes and rate and review us. On behalf of myself and Zach, we love you guys. Thanks for listening.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.